Well, I made it through the first hour without any major faux pas, and I'm still here. So thank you for sticking with us. So when the media, when auto executives, when analysts want to know what's happening in the auto industry, one of the first calls that they usually make is to Stephanie Brindley of S&P Global. And I'm delighted that Stephanie has joined us this afternoon, because if there's anything I love talking about, it is talking about our auto industry. So Stephanie, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So let's talk cars. The right. most complex industry on the planet, the most valuable supply chain on the planet. And our companies seem to, you know, be kind of in a gray area right now, especially when it comes to, you know, the on again, now off transition to electrification here in the domestic market. The tariffs, dramatically changing our supply chains. Give us your worldview of the automotive industry today.
You know, the automotive industry has been fighting so many different inputs over the past few years that it's been resilient before, but it has to be so even more so now. Tariffs are clearly changing the dynamics of financials and where you're going to build, where it makes sense to build, and the uncertainty even still and what the tariff situation is going to be in a year or so remains to be an issue. And, you know, we look at electric vehicle adoption, and it's happening. We are seeing more electric vehicle sales. The growth in electric vehicle registrations from January through August was about 9%, almost 10%, compared to the regular market growing about 4.5%. But it's not necessarily growing at a pace that in about 21 and 2022 was envisioned. So there's a little bit of a disconnect there.
So Jim Farley at Ford has forecasted that over the next year, new EV sales will drop to 5%. Are you that pessimistic?
We're not quite that pessimistic on that. I've got a number more for 2030. We think 2030 will be about 18 to 20% versus different points when that estimate was as high as 35%. But we do have a disconnect with electric vehicle cost, and I think the biggest issue isn't necessarily the raw price of the vehicle, but the fact that it's more expensive than an ICE version of a similar size and performance and function. That gets to be where the disconnect is for a lot of consumers. And we still have consumers learning. Transitioning to a predominantly electric vehicle market, there's a lot left to go there. There's a lot more understanding that needs to happen about what it's like to live with an electric vehicle, that it's really not that big of a challenge. It's not half as hard as people think that it is. But you know, you need to get that experience with it, and you need to see it. And that takes time. It takes having enough of them out there that you see them on the street, that your neighbors have one, that you see them around and you get exposed and see and talk to people who've lived with them for a year or two and say, hey, what's it like? All of that takes time. And we're in this process where that's happening, but it's just not going quite as fast as was planned and not quite as fast as capacity was being built to support.
So when, you know, you list all those issues that are kind of stunting consumer demand in America for electric vehicles, charge anxiety or range anxiety, however you want to describe it, cost as you described, and just kind of the uncertainty of kind of leaping into the unknown. What about kind of the cultural and political angle? I mean, it seems to me that, you know, there are a group of Americans out there that just kind of have this reflexive, probably tied to politics, just anti-EV stance. How much do you think that is kind of in the mix here of the slow adoption?
You know, it's those are interesting ones, and I think that generally, I think that someone who's chosen a political reason to say this is not what I want to do right now really has a whole list of reasons. They're just not ready for the change. That may be the one that comes to the surface, but I don't think that's the whole reason. And really, we don't have the capacity to suddenly be at a 70% EV market tomorrow. It's okay. I think to some degree, it is okay that it's going to take some consumers some time to get on board with this, because there's still capacity that needs to be built. There's still options that in terms of the number of vehicles you can choose from that still need to come out and come together. So I think some people adapting a little bit slower doesn't actually mean that shouldn't happen, and it doesn't mean that it's not progressing well. As to why they're going to slow their adoption and why they're going to consider it a little bit later, there's so much that goes into that. And it could be a lot of different reasons. Politics come, like I said, they come to play is something that people say. But I think very often that is somebody who has other reasons necessarily for not wanting to do it yet, whether they're worried about cost or they don't trust it and they haven't seen it enough, that may be part of it. And it may be simply it doesn't work for their lifestyle. EVs are terrific. They're not quite ready for everybody across the board.
Yeah, you know, Stephanie, I couldn't agree with that statement more. I mean, we're an EV family, but we have the luxury of being able to have an ICE engine car for those, you know, mm-hmm. long rides, you know, over the hill and through the dale to grandma's house.
Yeah.
But not everyone has that option. And, you know, one of the things that I, you know, say is that EVs are not right for everyone, but if you are, have a single family house and you have the ability to put in a charger, and DTE will subsidize that charger for you, and you have one ICE vehicle and one EV vehicle, it is the easiest thing in the world to live with. In fact, it's so enjoyable.
It can be. And again, you know, we would talk about road trips, but really not everybody does take road trips. So there are some people who can live perfectly well and have every one of their needs met and still have an EV and only an EV. It is still possible. I do think that home charging is one of the big enablers. Whether, you know, it's an apartment complex that starts adding more chargers, or whether you're able to put it into your home, that is the big yes or no relative to how easy it is to adapt or not adapt, and how easy it is to integrate with your life cycle, your lifestyle stages, if you have a place at home to charge. I think that's a trigger point for how successful adapting an EV is for you. It can be done without it, but it's much easier with.
And final question, Stephanie, as we wrap up, are the manufacturers going to kind of make up for the $7,500 tax credit that ended at the end of the month?
Some will, some won't. We've got some state incentives coming back up. I think they're going to hesitate a little bit. We know that the market sales are going to be down this quarter because we had so many people buying ahead. There isn't necessarily a rush to do it right this minute.
Well, as I mentioned to Trevor Lauer from DTE earlier in the show, my wife and I were one of those people who rushed to the dealership right before the deadline mm-hmm. of the $7,500 ended, and you know, got our next EV.
Great. That's terrific. And I think that underscores there's demand out there.
Yeah. Well, Stephanie Brinley from S&P Global, thank you so much. I love reading your stuff. So appreciate your leadership. And thanks for being on today.
Thank you for having me. Have a wonderful day.
You too. All right, folks. We'll be back in just a few seconds.